And we are back again, Corey. We're exiting a week wherein, I mean, some of the hottest games on the market have just hit the market.
Yes, they have.
You got your Dragon's Dogma 2. You got your Rise of the Rome. You got your Princess Peach's Showtime.
Yeah.
You got your Stardew Valley update 1.6, Corey. you cannot ask for anything more than that. I will tell you, I have had multiple people talk to me about, like, man, I wish I could find time to play something like Dragon's Dogma, but I'm all up in that Stardew Valley update. And I'm like, all right. Like,
I get it.
I had no clue that, I mean, for one, had no clue that it was coming in the first place, but then even afterward, like, no clue that it was that big of an update.
It's a huge update.
And people love it. Mm. Yeah. So people are super into it. Yeah. Are you going to check it out? Granted, the 1.6 update, I think, is like, I mean, as is the case with everything, is leading PC only. So it's, you know, not going to hit Switch or anything like that for a little while. But
so...
You do have a Steam Deck.
I do have a Steam Deck. This is a tough conversation. So Stardew Valley, I would say, is my primary, go-to farming sim cozy game of those.
Yeah.
I've tried multiple of them. The thing with all of these is I'm not in them very long. And so I currently have Stardew Valley on my Switch, and it always exists there. And I will say, probably generally with the seasons, as the seasons come and go. So spring has sprung. Now would be a good time to jump into Stardew Valley and probably get on my Steam Deck. But I usually will go hard for like 2-3 weeks and then, I'll come back to it when I come back to it. And then middle of summer, you know, now sounds like a good time to play some Stardew. I don't have that month. Not even months on end, but like 100 hours into a save. I usually make it about like 10 to 15. Then I'm like, all right, that was nice. I got what I wanted out of it. And so, yeah. Yeah, I'll probably play it. Yeah, I'll probably play it.
Yeah. In other news, Corey, did you know that Balatro was almost called Joker Poker?
I'm so glad. They didn't do that. Balatro just means joker in like Latin or something.
Oh, does it?
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Or it means like the fool, something along those connotations, I believe.
Very which nice. Is yeah.
an infinitely better name than a joker poker. Hey guys, you want to play joker poker? Hey, have you heard this cool new game, kids, called Joker Poker?
Yep. There's an interview with the developer on Game Informer, and they talk about that, some behind the scenes stuff. Funny thing though, I guess it's just their image. If you want yourself a good four of a kind, five of a kind deck, their image, it's the guy holding a handful of eight threes. Ooh. So yeah, just get down with that one. Yeah. Other than that though, I mean, well, first off, how are you doing? Before we dig in on anything meaningful, let's talk about your life, which is
doing well. Beginning of the week, had a great sports weekend. As everyone knows, I'm a huge sports guy. I mainly talk about my love of soccer. I am also a lover of baseball. Many would say two very different games. I would say two very similar games, but I digress.
Sister games, if you will.
Yeah, I am a big collegiate baseball sports fan. Specifically Clemson, and they went up against Florida State this weekend. In what is probably the craziest weekend of college baseball I've witnessed in person. I've been going to games for 17 years there. Okay. And they run ruled them. So they mercy rolled them in the first game on Saturday of a doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
Game two, they're down 8-1, bottom of the ninth, win 9-1. And then Sunday were down 11-2 and came back to win 14-12. They were down 11-2 into the sixth inning and came back to win. Probably the best version or best baseball team I've seen them have ever. So
okay,
it was a lot of fun. Okay. I'm still a little hoarse from it because I was screaming and yelling. But got plenty of gaming in. Excited to talk about it as well. But yeah, how are you?
I'm good. You know, work's been just rolling along. Nothing to complain about. Life, yeah, just got to enjoy a little, you know, our weather's kind of fluctuating a little bit. So it's warm, it's and then it's cold, and then it's warm, and then it's cold, and then it's, but, you know, enjoyed. We're kind of gearing up for my daughter's birthday party in about a month. So we're just trying to, some of the stuff that didn't, you know, get us, some of the stuff we didn't finish up before, after we moved in, before like it got really cold, we're trying to do now. So,
nice.
So yeah, kind of working on that stuff, enjoying some summer weather. Other than that, though, yeah, also games. Corey, today, we're breaking out an oldie in a way. Not really, like we're not revisiting something, but we're hopping back to an old format that we haven't touched in a long time, and that we actually have a topic today.
Yes,
we haven't done one. Yeah, we haven't done an actual topic in a while. I think mainly because games just kind of keep coming, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about week over week. And that's still true, but felt like it would be I was inspired. We had also been talking just in general about like just trying to make it a priority. Have some of that going on, so we are today, Corey, gonna be talking about games. I don't necessarily have the best name for it, but are there too much games? Are games too big? And because they are too big, do we like them less than we did once? Do we know them less than we did once? So we're going to talk about that. And then a little bit of what we've been playing. And then we'll get you home for dinner. Corey, let's dive in.
Let's get to it.
Yeah. So I was kind of inspired by, and I talked to you a little bit about this. I watched like I had a video essay pop up on YouTube from some guy I had never watched a video of before. And have not watched another video of since. But he was talking about like when games, I can't remember the name of the video. But it was like when games were simple. I'm going to look him up just so I can give some credit while I'm talking about it. But, he, you know, it was like a 20-30 minute video where he was talking about specifically like PS2 era games, like kind of seemed like our age. You know, I played plenty of SNES games and plenty of N64 games and like all these kind of things, but like PS2 does have like a special place, where like that was PS2 era was like our late elementary school going into, you know, close to like early high school, in a lot of ways, at least for me. His name also Bisley.
Channel,
when video games were simple. Seems like he kind of does some like video essay things, but like, you know, he in the video he talks specifically about like Kingdom Hearts a lot. He talks about Jack and Daxter, he talks about Sly Cooper, he talks about these games, and specifically like kind of like digs in a little bit about like, remember when games were just like comfortable being games? And like, that isn't to say that like games today aren't great. He's like, but you know, The Last of Us doesn't think of itself as a game. It thinks of itself as a movie. Whereas like, you know, playing Sly Cooper, where now all of a sudden you're just in a giant crab trying to catch coins. Like, it embraces the gameness of it, you know. Kingdom Hearts, the gummy ship. Who the hell knows why that exists? Because. But it does. And it's like, and it kind of like led me, I think in combination with some of my experiences playing Rebirth, it kind of led me to just think in general, like, because games are concerned with all of these other things now, beyond just being a game, have they become like so, not even just in length, but so bloated through all of these other things that they now kind of are, in a lot of ways, like less special and have less potential to be special than they used to be? And obviously that isn't like true 100% across the board, because I mean, you have stuff like Fortnite that exists that is like the quintessential, like it's a live service game. It's all, you know, it never ends. It's always going. It is enticing you to constantly be playing it. But for so many people, like, that is their nostalgia. That is going to be their nostalgia. Yeah. That is like a core part of it. And so I think there's like a level of nuance there that you have to kind of strike of like, what exactly strips that specialness away. And, you know, I'm just to kind of like lead us in a direction a little bit, like, you know, I think like in thinking about it, I think one of the things like coming out of Rebirth, for instance, that has really kind of like inspired this is how much, like how pointless so much of the side content feels in direct contrast to how like manicured and special the core experience does. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel like it should be like these two polar opposite kind of things. It feels like if the experience is going to be like kind of meaningless, then then wouldn't it make sense for it all to seem meaningless, and then vice versa, like it all be special? But it is one of these things where, like, you know, I'm at a point in Final Fantasy VII now where, like, you know, you go through the first area and you're on foot and you're going through the grass and you're running into like, oh, here's a chocobo ranch and here are these things, and you're like stumbling upon these open world elements. And it's not that like all of them are necessarily the most enticing, but it kind of makes sense with the story. Like, oh, they're going through this world. They're running across these things. That I get it. That makes sense. And then you hit the next area, and so you get to Junon, and you like step out of the cave, and then it's like, look, 100 feet in front of you is Junon. And it's like, all right, let's go. And in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, we'll go there. It'll probably bounce us back into the open world. We'll, you know, piddle around a little bit until we go into the next area. And it's like, if you just keep going with the main story, you literally never see the open world in Junon. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason for you to. And so for you to engage in any of that side content, it's, you have to actively seek it. You have to be like, I want to go and find these, like, this random, like, treasure cache out in the woods. Like, I want to just, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not being led here. I'm just like, just by pure completionist level drive, I'm going out there. And in a lot of ways, like, it feels like two different games. You know, it feels like the final, it feels like a game of old competing with a game of new. And I guess, like, you know, before we keep going along, Corey, I mean, how do you feel? Like, big question, I guess, big leading question. When was the last game that you remember that you were just enamored by? Like, you wanted to know everything about, You wanted to dig into, you wanted to just uncover everything like you did when you were a kid. You just wanted to eat this world.
And so I figured we didn't talk too much about like very specific questions we would bring for this, but I figured mm-hmm. this would be something that you would have. And so I had my answers ready for it.
Okay, let's go.
I looked over my previous years of GOTY list, and looking back over years of games, there's really only two. I would say in the last, like, let's just move back the last 3 years. If we want to go back to 2019, 2020, there's three games. So let's just do that, actually.
We have
originally Persona 5 / Persona 5 Royal. Okay. Absolutely enamored, adored by me and many others.
Yep.
Don't have anything else till Elden Ring. And then we have Baldur's Gate 3 / year. And I think why these three really, really stand out for me, and then we can kind of move from there, is they are all prioritizing gameplay, which is a huge thing. Not prioritizing your time by any means. But there's, I think, such a sense of place and such a sense of belonging in that place mm-hmm. and purpose of why you are there, that it's in itself feels a genuine experience. Compared to, you, and I think I texted you this before, looking at Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I think it suffers a lot from, you know, a Ubisoft mindset, or even other games like Fortnite, Call of Duty, Valorant, all these other games that want to be want to be everything, but want to consume all of your time. They take up huge amounts of space on your hard drives. They want to be the only thing you're playing all the time, and you to consume everything about it. And I think mm-hmm. I said with something like Final Fantasy Rebirth, is it would be absolutely slated for a majority of its open world activities if it didn't have the name Final Fantasy VII attached to it. Most people, if you read the reviews, and I think we talked about it as well, the side content is pretty meh outside of like Queen's Blood, which they knocked out of the park, which most Final Fantasy games do have some sort of game like that. Historically, that is really good. So that kind of falls in line with what they've done in the past. But everything else is kind of just not, it's there because they want you to spend a lot of time playing this game. They want you to run around the grasslands in Junon and to do all these watchtowers and everything that's going on there, because they want to be this, they want Final Fantasy VII Rebirth to eclipse Remake and the original and be this grandiose, epic game that you will replay over and over again like you did with the original Final Fantasy VII. And I think that's just a bad way to want to approach a game. Kind of feels like their approach, compared to something like, let's just go right back to last year, Baldur's Gate 3 and Larian. You know, there's a lot going on with them. We could talk about it. It's just, we decided we didn't want to. They've said their piece on it, and there doesn't need to be really anything else. But they spent years crafting this story and these characters that have so many different webs of possibility, so many different outcomes, so many different things that can truly happen based on your own player agency and imagination. Now, this isn't a go find your own fun scenario in a way that Rebirth is pushing. I feel like this is going to be a really good example. There's other examples such as like the Horizon series that I'll probably get into in a little bit later that I'm a champion for, but it has its very distinct flaws. You know, Baldur's Gate, the interaction will happen, and that can be, as the player, like, this is my decision, here's my action, here's the consequence, or the reaction to what I've done. Now, as a player, you can keep moving, or you can be like, that's interesting, I wonder if I did something different, what would happen then? And the game will, you can load a save file and see it completely differently, or you can replay it later on just to see what it's like. And they're never begging you to come back and do that. They're banking mm-hmm. on your own curiosity to get you there. But there's no, like, there's no sense of I've missed something. yeah. after those decisions. While it feels like running around some of these open worlds and you see all these quest markers and all these different objectives that are popping up on the map, like with Horizon, like here's all these bandit camps, here's all these different spots where all the machines are, you know, here's mm-hmm. these hunting grounds, here's all these things that you're missing by just running by it. While in Baldur's Gate, there's none of that. It's just there's this name of this bridge like off over here, and if you go over there, something's going to happen. But there's nothing directly on the map like beckoning you this way. It's just a natural yep. sense of discovery. Sure, going the same yep. with Elden Ring as well. You know, you step out into Limgrave and you see the huge castle in the distance. It very doesn't tell you that's where you have to go, but it very much wants to guide your eyes in that direction. And as you talk to other NPCs in the area, as in most traditional older games, as you would talk to NPCs and they would kind of guide you where you needed to go, instead of this often handhold story or these massive objectives that show up on maps, it was up to you to kind of trust what the game is telling you and be guided through it from there, instead of, as you've stated, and like I agree, you go make your own fun, enjoy the world we've crafted for you, but look at all this different stuff you can do. Look at these towers mm-hmm. you can climb, look at these beast hunts you can do, look at this, all these areas that your chocobo can sniff, and it's insanely frustrating to turn him slowly while he waits for the ground to explode with light, and don't you walk past that light and miss your peck, otherwise you have to watch the whole animation, take two steps back, do the animation again. And we're getting in the weeds, but I'm fine to get in the weeds with this. There's just too much, ultimately, expectations on a lot of these games, and too much, I think, greed kind of seeping into the higher-ups' pockets for a lot of games that are pushing so much of this over-bloatness, this mm-hmm. Almost like gluttony on like what they want their player base to be doing. I mean, look at something like Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. Was it as bad as everyone was saying? Doesn't seem like it is, but you know, we talked about it previously. That isn't a style of game that studio is known to make or seems to have wanted to make particularly. And this giant live service game was pushed down on them because they wanted a live service game, not another Arkham game. And those Arkham games are phenomenal stories that people love. Aside from just being Batman games, they are just good brawling games that they like nailed that formula on, that Spider-Man fully stole as well. That whole beat 'em up, like dodging with like the little flashing thing. That's a different mm-hmm. story. They did great. I love both. But those are my thoughts. Is just, I think when you look at those, I didn't even touch on Persona. It's its own thing, truly. But these games have, like, they trust you to trust them. There's a guiding hand, and they want to show you what they have. And they're prepared to, you know, let you fail a little bit, but also very much very happy to reward you when you succeed. Unlike so many other games that feel like, here's, like, this breadcrumb of success, or here's this new weapon that does 0.2% more damage on your basic attack. You know, keep grinding mm-hmm. more and you might get the 0.4%. I'm kind of running away with it here, but those are kind of just some early thoughts of why I think so many games are falling a little flat for a lot of people, or not staying with a lot of people. Because they're doing a lot of things that all the other games are doing. They just want your attention so much. They want you to be playing them constantly. I mean, so much money is poured into so many of these AAA games. It would only make sense that they would want you to play it all the time. But that's not what gaming was for myself growing up. That isn't what it was for a lot of people growing up. I mean, I think the current generation might be a little different. There's a lot. I mean, like you said, a lot of their core memories are Fortnite or Minecraft or Apex Legends, these games that have demanded constant attention, constant captivation, or you'll feel like you've been left behind by it, which is not a fun feeling.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at initially right now.
Well, and you know, and I'm glad that you brought that up, like, toward the end, specifically, like, you know, games, the priority of games being so different today than they were before, because I think that that is the, like, whenever I was thinking about it, and I was like, okay, like, a long game, because Persona 5, I mean, it is one of the longest, like, core story types of experiences you can have in a game. Like, to complete the main story, it's still over 100 hours. Like, it's not just to have that full experience, but that doesn't necessarily make it, like, a longer game is not necessarily a worse game or a less meaningful game or a more bloated game. And so, like, in thinking about, like, okay, well, what makes it, what creates the problem then? Like, I think it does come down to intent. And, like, I was looking at there's a Washington Post article called "Video Games Keep Getting Longer, Period. It's All About Time and Money, Period." And, you know, they talk about long games. Like, they have this, like, slider in here that's like, oh, if you put in how many hours a day you play games, and this would tell you how long it would take you to finish whatever. So if you played 3 hours a day, it would take you 20 days to complete the main story in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, like, as opposed to 8 days for Pokemon Legends Arceus. Like, okay. You know, so kind of, you know, it talks about game length. But one of the things it also talks about specifically is, like, you know, when open worlds were originally created, the goal was to make them feel more alive, mm-hmm. like, whenever, to, like, better realize these kind of things. And that was the thing when you and I were kids, was, like, games were so incredibly linear, and the idea of having, like, a game from one of our, like, most beloved franchises in an open world, and the idea of just being able to explore it more openly, like, felt amazing. And now the idea of that feels like terrifying. Like, it feels like that would be the way to kill a favorite franchise in a way. And I think it comes from the intent where it's like, nowadays, and in the article it talks about, like, nowadays that isn't the goal so much. Like, people can make games feel lively and personal through plenty of different ways. The reason that there is so much of that is because of the intent, like, the company wanting to be in control of your time. And mm-hmm. like, that is the core. I mean, it's the thing that, like, streaming companies are, you know, openly, you know, they want your time. They want your attention. They are going to, they want to figure out ways, because the only way that they work is if you watch them
more. Mm-hmm.
And if you, like, advocate for them, and you get every, like, you know, and so they spend billions of dollars on the big show so that everybody comes to them and subscribes so that they can watch Friends or, you know, whatever. And games want the same experience. Whereas, like, you know, back in the day when, I mean, even looking at same franchises, like, going back with the original Assassin's Creed, you know, I imagine the original vision with Assassin's Creed was just, like, creating this never before seen, you know, stealth action gameplay type thing. You know, you have these open city environments and you can, you know, choose how you want to assassinate these targets and you can do these things. And, like, you know, there are very few side quests. They're very, like, There's not much of an open world to see. You kind of ride 5 steps out of a city, and then it's like, ah, you want to fast travel to this other city?
Yeah.
And that's basically the extent of it. And then fast forward, you know, 15 years, and, you know, it's easy to lose track of what is even the story in an Assassin's Creed game, or even the fact that it's a stealth game at all because of the way that it, like, presents itself. And it comes from a lot of the, like, again, it comes from intent. It comes with like, what is the goal there? And I think like games when we were kids, the reason they felt simple, the reason they felt special, the reason that we felt like so invested in them partially is like, you know, we're kids. We have nothing better to do. Mm-hmm. Like they're, you know, I owned all of like a dozen Nintendo 64 games, you know, across my entire life playing it. Like, granted, I mean, I rented plenty of them and played them at other friends' houses, but like I owned a very core set of games. Meanwhile, like, you know, whenever I moved into our new house and I was doing the inventory of like games and stuff, I had over 100 just PS4 games. Like, you know, I mean, physical, like,
yeah,
like not to mention like digital editions and just all these other things, like, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, there are plenty more games, but it is one of those things where like, I go back and I think about some of those older games and I also think about some of these newer games that are still long, but still drawing my attention. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that like, they are very comfortable being who they want to be. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, looking at something like Persona 5, Persona, like as like intimidating as it can be, Persona just doesn't shy away from the fact that they want to tell this very like protracted story.
Mm-hmm.
They want to draw it out. They could condense that stuff down, but they don't. And they're fine with that. And I think that there is a charm in being able to see a game and know like this game is being the best version of itself. You know, so for Persona, it's doing that. For something like Yakuza, like mm-hmm. Yakuza, plenty of options, plenty of things that you can do in Yakuza. Some of it gels, some of it doesn't. But I think the reason that like the stuff in there that like, because it's open world, it's full of side activities, but it doesn't bother me and it doesn't feel weird. I think largely because like at the end of the day, Yakuza still just feels like it's trying to be Yakuza. Like
yeah.
It's not trying to dumb down its Yakuza-ness to get in an audience that wouldn't otherwise like it. It's just being like, hey, we're blowing it up. We're expanding it. Like, you know, we're still Yakuza. If you like Yakuza, you're going to like this game. But hey, if you're a big fan of Yakuza and you also happen to like, you know, Animal Crossing, we got you covered. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's that stuff in there. And I think that it's, on the opposite side of the coin, looking at something like, oh, it's Assassin's Creed. Like Assassin's Creed decided it didn't want to be Assassin's Creed anymore.
Yes.
And decided it wanted to be something else, but just happened to hold on to the same name. And I think that that is one of the things that does feel off is like games back in the day felt like they just knew what they were. Mm. Obviously they were a business. They were trying to, you know, there were marketing tactics. They were building in some way. I'm sure there were a lot of decisions that were made that weren't necessarily up to like artistic vision or whatever. But they were being built specifically because it was just like, hey, you know, this is for the most part what we want to do. And after the game comes out, we can't do anything with it. Like we can't just update it with content so that people will spend more money on it. Like we just have to make the best game that we can and hope that people buy it. And nowadays, having the option to like specifically, I mean, I think it's mobile gaming that kind of like started dragging that down, and for the wrong reasons, where it's like, you know, games like Candy Crush, Clash of Clans, even like me with like Marvel Snap, like, you know, their mobile games, like Marvel Snap is disgusting with the amount of like money transaction where it's like, hey, you want this variant of Cyclops and maybe like 100 gold, give us $50. And it's like, it's disgusting, but it's like, it's one of these things where like in mobile gaming, you know, it is so, it is just kind of like part of that environment. And like, they're doing that because it's just, it's part of the revenue model. And I think the thing that like never has translated and never will translate over to modern like console gaming, AAA gaming, is trying to take this approach where, you know, you are trying to combine both of those worlds. Like mobile gaming, that is the economy. That is the thing. That's always been the thing, basically. Not always, but like that's always just kind of been a part of that world. Mm-hmm. And when you try to bring it over to, you know, other video games, it becomes this like disparate thing where it's like you're buying a full experience that's being made worse because you want me to spend more money on things that like I don't want or don't need, or you're locking out content, or you're holding back content, or you're whatever. And it's, I don't know, it's a, I'm gonna let you dig in a little bit further. Okay. But it's a thing to me again, TLDR, I think a lot of times comes down to like, what is the reason that this game exists in the first place? And more, I feel like the games that, or the parts of games that do the worst, that are the worst received, are the ones that are so obviously just completely against the vision mm-hmm. of what the core game is. A la Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, yep. with a main story that, you know, is doing great, like regardless of whatever you feel like, overall, stories, like I'm engaged in the story, engaged in the characters, but the afterthought part of it, the side content that is solely there just to pad the experience, mm-hmm. very obviously is something that is just like completely, it doesn't jive with the intent of the game, with the original vision. And for that reason, for me, is just like, it falls flat. And I feel like that is the experience kind of across the board in a lot of ways with things like this.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at an original Final Fantasy VII is like 35, 40 hours. Remake is like 35, mm-hmm. 40 hours. Rebirth is 40 hours for main story. If you're doing anything else, you know, you're probably touching 50 to 65. Completionists I've seen are like 85 to 100. Whatever, you know, re-release is going to be, you're looking probably another 40 hours. So you're looking at nearly 100 hours of just straight story that's being retold over 30 of what was a 35 hour game. And you're like, that's just so much app. That's so much bloat added on to what is been universally brought forth as one of, maybe not one of the greatest games of all time, but maybe one of the greatest games of all time, but maybe one of the most influential games of all time. Mm-hmm. And looking at a lot of older games, and when we're kids, things do seem simpler. But I do think back then there was just, studios were so happy to take risks with things. And I think someone looking at, they have very bad work practices that they do seem to be getting better at, but the studio isn't without controversy. Look at Naughty Dog though. And so I grew up on the PlayStation 2. And I think a good example of games being games and a studio like willing to take a risk and have fun and tell still the story that they're wanting to tell is something like Jak and Daxter. You have your yep. first game, which is pretty much almost a Zelda ripoff now that I'm older. You know, young, mute, silent protagonist from the village. Instead of needing to save the princess, is saving all the sages of the land. And it's this almost like nature spiritualistic like journey with Jak and Daxter as they were through different biomes. And it's very simple. You have your story and then there's an overarching completionist where you get all their precursor cells. There's 101 or something like that. And I played through it multiple times, got all of them. And that was the game. But then you move into Jak 2. And they say, we are jumping away from that. This is now a dark, gritty, angsty Jak who swears, and we're in a city now, and you have guns.
Yeah.
Studios aren't making that sort of a leap. or such a drastic change in their style anymore, because that's not a safe bet. That's not what's going to bring them the money. That's not something that they can like truly like keep advertising. Instead, you have, you know, someone like a Studio Santa Monica who made God of War 4, but the remake, which is a incredible 10-hour journey that I think succeeded so well. I can't remember. Someone else said this, and it like completely changed the way I view both that and Ragnarok. Is like the first game works so well because you're seeing the world through Atreus's eyes, through a child's mm-hmm. eyes, as you're running through it. And then Ragnarok eliminates that, and you're seeing it through Kratos's eyes, but over like 5 times the length of the game, which I guess, you know, kind of is how adulthood feels at times. But instead of like keeping this incredibly tight story where this beautiful relationship blossoms, they bloated out to a 50-hour game that I still really like a lot. I don't know if I would I had it at number 2 on my game of the year list in 2022. Maybe like 2 slots slower. If I was to rank it right now, still really like it, but you look like they played it safe and just tried to bulk in more of what the first game was in hopes that more and more people would play it. Now, I think something like their DLC of Valhalla, which is this roguelite, really good, would love something more like that. I would love like a full experience of something like that. That could have been your sequel to God of War. And then you bring in Ragnarok as kind of like a third game that's shorter anyway, moving on. But, and, you know, I'm thinking about, because we brought up Assassin's Creed, and Assassin's Creed isn't the bane of all the evils in gaming, but it's brought a lot of evils in gaming. You look at their transition from that stealth game, and like Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood is where they absolutely nailed it. Though you have distinct setting of Florence and Italy, a strong character, strong cast, and like you understand his purpose. You've worked through it with him across multiple games, and there's consistency there. They're not playing it safe either. They are changing things up. They're adding more to it, but not for the sake of adding to it. They're adding to it to continue your main character's progression story. Ezio goes from this novice assassin to very adept assassin to a master assassin who's leading his own brotherhood, his own guild. And that feels like not a bloat for bloat. That's a progression for your character and your story. And I think they kind of ran out of ideas after 3, where they transitioned to that open world. Not like 3, but it's not without its flaws. And going in and around there, they saw Witcher 3 come through. And The Witcher 3 is a game that I think would not work now. At the time, 2015, The Lightning in a Bottle, this like really revolutionized, I think, how story was done in these huge open world games, where like, you know, there isn't a ton of choice, but there is like very distinct, impactful decisions on how the world will change based on what you do, or certain aspects of the world will change depending on what you do. But you look at all of its side quests, which it has so many side quests. There is never a moment where you go to this huge tower, like in Horizon, or those Tallnecks, or towers in Final Fantasy VII, or these other like waypoints that will all of a sudden reveal the map and show you, here's what all of your little question marks are. Witcher 3 is just question marks abound. If you want to go find out what that question mark is, that's up to you. And something interesting will usually happen, sometimes not. But that wasn't a look at everything we have going on. That was you're Geralt of Rivia, you're a Witcher. You need money. Like his whole thing is kind of poking around the aspects of the world. And I think that felt in line with the game's spirit, with the game's purpose, with what your main character is trying to do, instead of trying to dazzle you with what can happen. And I think another game like Ghost of Tsushima in 2020 is another great example. They took, I think, a lot of the lessons that Assassin's Creed and Ubisoft never learned with those in their Far Cry games and Watch Dogs and everything. And they put you on a very large island, it ended up being. But on the initially in this small pocket, they changed, like, you follow the wind to your quest destinations. And instead of all these different little things on the map showing up, the world itself would guide you. There would be the yellow swallow who would take you to these different spots. The foxes, you would find meditation points where you would like craft a haiku and spend just small moments in games, like moments that felt very impactful and meaningful for the character. And I think so many games just get away from that. It's an amusement park. Jump on the roller coaster. Here's the merry-go-round. Here's the Ferris wheel. See all the attractions. Stay here for forever instead of really focusing on what they're trying to do. And now that I'm on it, I think Ghost of Tsushima is a great example of not a perfect game in terms of its bloatedness, because it does kind of bloat in the second and third act, but it does keep itself grounded in what it's doing. It wants you there, but it wants you to experience Jin's story, his struggle, his people's struggle as he's trying to liberate this island. When you are taking down quote unquote bandit camps, it's not for the sake of loot or for often progressing the story. It is for the sake of Jin and his own personal quest of vengeance on his enemies. Him taking down those camps, I mean, there was always, you know, you can find gold and some loot in there, but playing it, that never felt the purpose. It felt this is an invasion on my island. I am the ghost of Tsushima, or I am a samurai, and I can't let this stand any longer. I have to be active here. Instead of, I think Far Cry is just a bandit camp for a bandit camp, and, you know, woohoo, fun. Kind of a thing. And so many games now, I think, just really lose the scope of what they're trying to do. And that's kind of what we've been saying over and over again. But I do miss older games that really just wanted to, the developers, the teams really just want to make a game that you could go have fun, replay as many times as you want. The amount of times I replayed Jak and Daxter, Precursor Legacy, or even Sly 2. You know, the sense of belonging, especially in that first in Paris and France. And oftentimes I would just go and restart and just play through that over and over again with the music, the fun introduction of how you run across rooftops, some of the fun, like dazzling set pieces where they want you to have fun with Carmelita Fox and, oh, who was the, well, she was a leopard, right? The other one who ended up being the main villain at the end of it all. Spoilers for Sly 2.
She was investigator.
Yeah, something like that.
I can't remember her name.
Those early set pieces running across the rooftops in Paris is unforgettable. And so I just think about those and, again, that's just a small, probably a 2-hour segment of that game. That game's really short. It feels really long in hindsight, but I replayed it so many times that it probably just feels that way. Then there's all, I'm on a Sly 2 train. You have your tango dance with Carmelita Fox. And is it in India? The India play? I believe so. Do the tango, and it's like this, like, awful tango. Impressing, like, mini game, and like if you mess it up, it's like this weird, like, squeaking noise.
Was it in India? I thought it was like, I can't remember. See, now I'm just curious. Sly 2 tango with Carmelita. Yeah, because it was where you were trying to get, wasn't it where you were trying to get Murray back?
Was it Murray? I thought you were no, Murray's in Sly 3. You're in Venice trying to get Murray back.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. It looks like India, maybe.
But so just thinking about that and that aspect, I mean, that could just be a core memory in gaming for me because I can hear the squeak noise when you mess up the dance. It's horrendous. But just looking, like the fact that I can go back and remember that small segment in this game, you know, there was purpose behind it. It was fun. The team is having fun with it. They've made it memorable. There isn't too many small little mini games or side, like little parts of a story. I mean, that was in the main quest of it all. Yeah. But it's insignificant in the grand scheme of it all compared to so many games I've played nowadays that I can't even remember half of what I did in those games. It was just there to be there because they needed something there because this game has to be 120 hours for completionist, and so we need more game. Just put more game in this game, and we'll be happy, is what so many people are being told. And that sucks. That's just not fun. It's not fun for the player because you're just, there is a sense of, like, am I actually going to miss out on something? Like Final Fantasy 16.
Yep.
Love it to death. Side quest, awful. Up until the very end of the game in which the side quests all of a sudden become like very integral to the characters and the story and that like final few hours for the finale, you get so much detail about, I don't want to get into too many spoilers but about some of the other characters, but like your main companion Jill throughout the game, who has had very significant beats in the main story. You have this beautiful like conclusion to her and Clive's journey that is completely optional. You can totally miss it. And it's very much like them cementing what they are to one another. And you could just skip that. And you'd miss that absolutely entirely because the game so much ahead of time has just made doing these side quests and these other optional things pointless. They've made it uninteresting. It's there to be there if you want to go do it. And after like two or three of them, you're like, well, let's forget those and let's mainline it. And then all of a sudden they've made them purposeful again. Like, why couldn't that? Why bloat it out to 50 different side missions when you can have 10 throughout your main story that all have so much value and so much meaning? And it's because they just want more game. And there's,
yeah,
by making more game, they're making less game. That's annoying.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good way of putting it. You know, making more game is making less of a game, especially for a lot of people. And I think a lot of it too comes down to like a level of fear somewhat like developers and publishers, like at the same time, of, in some respects, like, you know, this product not being seen in its entirety by everybody. And like, by all accounts, I mean, fewer people complete games today than ever. Like,
yep,
by all accounts, by making a bigger game that's filled with all of this stuff that you, like, by and large, kind of have to do to some extent, like you have to do a fair bit of, or you're at least like compelled to do a fair bit of, like, you know, 10 to 15% of people are actually going to finish your game in the first place. Mm-hmm. So why not like try to make it so people actually see more of your game? But I think that that's where the strength of developers like From come in, where it's like, you know, Elden Ring is gigantic. And if you're going to have, like, if you're going to just play that game, you're going to spend 70 to 80 hours at minimum getting through it. But it's like, From Software has always been just super comfortable with the fact that it's like, you're not going to see everything.
No.
Like, no matter what you try to do, you're probably not going to see it all in your first time through. You're going to have to play it a few times if you want to. And so, like, they are actively, like, encouraging, like, people just have to you have to spend more dedicated time in this world, like intentional time in this world, doing the stuff that you want to do to have the best experience here. And Baldur's Gate 3 has a similar thing where it's like, you know, I heard a buddy talking about like, I'll never play Baldur's Gate 3. Like, as much as I love D&D, just because of like, I'm a completionist, I'm going to have to want to do everything. And it's so overwhelming. And I'm like, honestly, one of the most freeing things about Baldur's Gate 3 is like the fact that I know that I cannot do everything. Yep. Like, I got to the end of Baldur's Gate 3 and there was so much stuff that I had not seen. Like, you and other people were like, well, did you see this? Did you do this? And I was like, no, never even heard about that. And it didn't like bum me out, because I was just like, well, I guess the next time I play through it, I'm going to make it a point to do that. And I was very comfortable with that, because it was like the way that the game was presented, it seemed very comfortable with it just being like, there's a world happening here. You experience it the way that you want to. Mm. This is you bought the game, play the game the way that you want to play it, and just, you know, see as much as you want, see as little as you want, do your thing. And so many games are concerned with like, they want you to be there all the time and they want you to just be filled with things to do. And it not necessarily be meaningful anymore. And, you know, we're running a little long on the topic of it, but like, one additional thing that I forgot to bring up, but also did pop to mind, like I'm reminded a little bit of like World of Warcraft, for instance. Mm-hmm. World of Warcraft, if you're not familiar, I'm sure you're familiar with World of Warcraft, but World of Warcraft, a number of years ago, you know, after 6-7 expansions, Blizzard came out with World of Warcraft Classic. World of Warcraft Classic was like, okay, so 2019. It was another version of World of Warcraft that, after all of this time, reverted the game back to the original, no expansion World of Warcraft. The World of Warcraft that I started playing on.
Yep.
And when I was a kid, or when I started playing World of Warcraft, I was like in middle school, going into high school. Like, back then, I was so immersed in World of Warcraft. Like, I ate it up. I wanted to know every secret. I wanted to know like all of these characters, like, you know, what their whole story was. Like, I was so motivated to follow these quest lines all the way through, because I was like, I just want to see this stuff play out. And I want to see this arc like 20 levels from now, when I show up in this other area and that guy's there. Oh, I want to see where this goes. Mm-hmm. And like going into the raid content, I want to see this big arc that they've been building up over the last like 2 years. I was so immersed in that. And over time, I mean, understandably so, World of Warcraft became much quicker and much more accessible. Where it was a thing, like whenever I was playing initially, it was like, you want to go into even like the most simple dungeon, you had to sit in front of the dungeon and like wait to get picked up like a hitchhiker by some group who just needed somebody. Or you had to like, you know, shout out and chat and just wait for somebody to pull you in. And then you went in there and it was like a 3-4 hour commitment. I can't remember what it's called. In Burning Crusade, it's a dungeon. I spent 8 hours in that. In the base mode, spent 8 hours beating it. Then, months later, they came out with like hard mode or whatever for it. Went back, different group, another 8 hours trying to beat a dungeon I already had beaten before. Like, but it was like, that was the experience.
Yeah.
And understandably, they started to streamline that, because who can do that? Who can get 40 people together to
impossible to raid nowadays
a thing? And so like there was a level of like, you know, that being understandable. And I totally got that and like appreciated that whenever I got into college and stuff and still wanted to play, but didn't have necessarily as much time or didn't want to as much, where I could still experience some of the raid content and I could still experience some of those things without having to have the commitment. But there was so much lost in stripping away that original vision and that original, like, again, intent. And whenever Classic came out and it reverted back to this quote unquote classic version of the game, that, you know, where you did have to, you had it one fast travel, mm-hmm. you set it to a random inn that you wanted to go to, and you could do it once an hour. And if you wanted to go to this other continent that, you know, you had been kind of close to before, you had to take a 10-minute Griffin flight over there and then run for another 45 minutes to get over, get over the place. And you had to, like, it was that kind of experience. But you, because of, they had built the world with that in mind. Mm-hmm. And whenever the vision started to condense itself, that world, that experience, the travel, all of that became so secondary. Almost kind of like a Game of Thrones season one to Game of Thrones season last season. Ooh, you yeah. know, where mm-hmm. it's like season one, they spend the entire season traveling to yep. like King's Landing, for instance. And then in the last season, like in an episode, they're basically fast traveling from like, oh, they go to King's Landing and back and then back to King's Landing and back again within an episode. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's still the same world. It still has the same like richness, but so much is being lost for the sake of a new goal.
Yes.
Like, which in their mind at that point is like, they're streamlining this to tell a different, to tell the story differently than they were before.
Yes.
And, yes. And I think that is kind of the core of it, is like, it isn't the length. It isn't necessarily like it being open world. It isn't necessarily like, you know, I don't think that makes a game less memorable or less engrossing or less, you know, have less potential to be like a memorable, long-lasting game in our memories. So much that it is just like, what is the goal here? Mm-hmm. Why is that existing? Why are we doing this? And if you aren't like, if you're creating a world that it, for the sole purpose is to just grind time away, then I'm going to feel significantly less attached to it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel like, because you are not valuing my time, I'm not going to really care too much about, like,
yeah.
It's going to be more likely that I'm going to be skipping through dialogue, that I'm going to be like, beelining it from one place to the other, because it's like, it doesn't feel like my time is being valued here. So what's the point? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, older games, everything felt so lovingly crafted. And even, I mean, again, new games too, plenty of them. Indie games are, you know, kind of the champions of this nowadays, where it is like, they're coming from a different direction, where it's like, we want to create something that we love, that we want to play. Obviously we want to make money, mm-hmm. but you know, we want you to be like an advocate of us and a champion for our cause because we made a good game, not because we've brainwashed you into spending all of your free time for the last 5 years in our world and it's all you know anymore. So
because you know, we've been focusing on, you know, what makes a good game, specifically looking into this open world aspect of it and what's been going wrong in those, because those have become the most prevalent games being released nowadays. I mean, Like we just said, Dragon's Dogma 2, Rise of the Ronin just came out. We haven't picked up either of those yet, or at least I haven't. I don't know if you have, but I mean, I think we reached the breaking point with the game cycle for us. But looking at a game that's not like that, where I think they nail everything and why it is so memorable, and I'm shocked neither of us have mentioned it, would be Hades that came out in 2020. You look at that game like that, which is very small. How would you describe it? Very small in scope, but massive in depth. Everything revolves around Zagreus's quest to escape Hades and find his mother. And so as you go through the game, like the game only really progresses as you die. When you make it back to the hall, like your relationships will change. You'll learn different information from different characters. You'll be able to take what you've done previously and what has come about in your quest to make your quest even easier with the mirror as you upgrade Zagreus and move forward. You unlock new weapons. And progressively, as a little bit of Zagreus's aims change, so does the world shift with him to be more conducive to those aims. Without getting spoilers, you know, it's moved from attempting to find his mother to being able to find a way to free her, and then so on and so forth. That core aspect of change, but Zagreus himself and his progression and his journey and the characters alongside him adjust with it. Any of the side quests that come up, these characters always fall back into the main aim for you as the player. There's rarely, if any, side quests that feel impossible or there is just a fluff piece where they're like, hey, just do this to do this. The only one I think you could like argue would be Charon and like the fight you have with him. But even then, there's a sizable and very tangible reward immediately every time after taking him on. You know, there's plenty of games where there's a boss just for a boss's sake, especially nowadays. I mean, you look at Millennia and Elden Ring, where this might be one of the few where they get it wrong. This insanely hard boss that feels impossible, that you do have to go out of your way to seek out, that is very difficult to just learn without doing some prior knowledge. There isn't a ton of reward for that other than the satisfaction of you've won. Now, and then on the other hand, you look at something in Kingdom Hearts 2 against Sephiroth, you get a ridiculously strong, like, melee keyblade. And if you are a melee focused character of how you built your Sora, that's hugely rewarding, and feels normal. But then there's, you know, the fan service of that as well. But those are two different approaches to these. And possibly difficult, well, three different approaches between Charon, Sephiroth, and Millennia, three different skill levels as well. It's just these different approaches and those different outcomes and why those feel rewarding as well. All those feel really good compared, again, to maybe something that doesn't feel good would be the Thunderjaws in the Horizon series. Incredible to take down. So fun to do, but it's there to do if you want to. There's very little tangible rewards other than, you know, machine parts. It's just, hey, go take this on in this really cool, fun way. That's not a set piece. It's like fully you doing it, how you want to tackle that. But that's just like a difficult challenge for the sake of a difficult challenge most of the time. To wrap it up with Hades, there's just so much purpose and so much soul to the game. I think that is a simple game that will stick with many of people for such a long time because of what its purpose is and what the team behind it, what their intent was. Yeah, I think I'm talked out on the subject. It's a good one. Yeah, I think we've danced around it for like months now. Oh my gosh, you know. And to be fair to Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, their director came out and said, yes, this is the biggest Yakuza game ever. Please don't try and finish it all at once, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, come back, like, take breaks, come back to it. We want you to see it all, but, like, don't feel like you have to see it right away. I mean, you're coming off that, then there's Dragon's Dogma 2, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Rise of the Ronin, a Stellar Blade demo is officially releasing this Friday.
Yep, yep, on Friday.
And then, I mean, last year, it was just games galore, and everything's just constantly, constantly begging for your attention that it feels good right now to kind of not jump on Dragon's Dogma 2 or Rise of the Ronin to kind of just, let's breathe.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to tackle Rebirth for its linear story. Go back to Infinite Wealth, wrap that up. And you, I think the players, more than anyone right now, have to kind of make a decision of, like, hey, it's just, it's not sustainable for you developers to do what you're doing. And it's not sustainable for us either. And, I feel like it's going to be the player base that has to kind of take this a step back and be like, I can't keep devoting everything to this one game, because there's plenty of other great games coming out that are going to be more respectful and honorable and of my time and, like, of the art medium that it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's, you know, to wrap it up on my end, like, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years, there isn't some sort of, like, severe, just, you know, reining in of this stuff. I mean, I feel like that's been the conversation for years, but, you know, it's already a conversation in, like, streaming media, mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, like,
look at the layoffs just going on right now.
Right. And then you come over to games and you see the number of layoffs, you see the number of people who are legitimately, like, you know, great games, like, yeah, some of the best games ever, but industry-wide seems like some of the worst years,
yeah,
for people who are actually working in it. And the, and also, like, I don't even have the time to play them, mm-hmm. because, like, the average game length is like 60 hours now. So, like, what's even the point? Like, why, why are you bleeding people dry and firing them to create games that people can't even play?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that I think that there will be a reckoning, you know, where people will, not everybody, obviously, but, like, where you will start to see companies who have made these big games start to, to hone it in a little bit, to, like, you know, not be so focused on, like, doing all of this, like, who knows, whether they're cutting back on, like, you know, the world size, they're cutting back on, like, you know, the fidelity or whatever, mm-hmm. and in turn of, or, like, in choice of doing, you know, more creative art directions and, you know, whatever, who knows, but, like, I feel like that's going to be the thing where they are going to start, like, reining it in so that they can create more, like, tailored, you know, memorable experiences. Hopefully. If not, then I guess games are just all I will do in my free time until I die.
Forever. Yeah. Man. Yeah. This is another topic for another day, but the industry really needs to move away from the remaster remake plaguing. There's too much time and effort from studios pushing all of these remasters and remakes and dropping, you know, hundreds of million dollars budgets to remake a game that they hope will hit the nostalgia fuel and people will swallow up and they get a huge profit off of it, instead of just re-releasing the games on modern platforms for $5 to $10. I think that is, don't get me wrong, I love remake, like, some of the games that are being redone and brought forward. I look at Shadow of the Colossus as a huge one that was done in recent memory. They could have just re-released the original because yeah, it is a one-to-one outside of graphic fidelity. And, you know, that's a topic for another day, but that's It's just not sustainable. And
yeah.
I would like it to be sustainable for everyone.
It would be nice. Yeah. Corey, moving on. Games that we've been playing. Honestly, I'm not going to contribute a ton because I did kind of in that whole discussion share a little bit about I've been playing Rebirth.
Yep.
Still enjoying the story a lot. Still, like, I've gone back and done a little bit of the side content because I had, again, because the game just completely does not, like, even hint at the fact that this side content over here that is otherwise meaningless exists outside of the main story. I didn't even realize that the Fort Condor stuff was a part of I guess pretty much exclusively a part of this random just side story quest line. Because I realized I was like, I think like I looked at our trophies and I was like, I'm around like where Corey is, but like, I feel like he was talking about Fort Condor a long time ago and I never saw it. And I looked it up and it was one of these like proto relic quests. And then I was like, okay, I gotta go do the proto relic thing. But again, I almost just did not do the Fort Condor stuff for this reason. And I'm going to be livid about something. The Rebirth that really pissed me off, where it was like, you're doing the proto relic thing, and it's just like, it's a, for anybody who hasn't done them, in each of the areas is just like some, you know, I'm invested in whatever the like core mystery of it is.
Yes.
It seems like there's like a, you know, there's a payoff coming where like you collect this thing, Cloud's kind of like transported to another world, and there's like this mysterious man and you want to kind of like, I kind of want to figure out what's going on there, and the story kind of
that's the
like
one
advances as you find these
really right. good
yeah so like I did the one in the grasslands, and I'm doing the in that one like was no problem, and
annoying.
Then I'm doing this a little annoying, but like the one in Junon, you do a couple of them and then it's like, okay, it's over here. So then I start making my way over there, and then I run into some guy who's like, hey, you can't come through here. And I'm like, okay, why not? And he's like, you got to do this side quest first.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go find Rhonda. And so then I was like, okay, I'll fast travel back to the city and I guess talk to her. And probably it'll be quick and I'll get back to the thing. And I talked to her and she's like, I need you to escort my dog over to the place. And I'm like, okay, maybe I can just fast travel and he'll be there. No, I have to escort him all the way back to the place I just was 3 seconds ago. And I was so pissed.
Great.
I was like, I almost was just like, I'm not doing this. This is the dumbest thing that you were making, that you were just walling off this entire section so that I will do your dumb ass escort quest. And then I do it. I'm no better for it.
The music track and then, goes hard though.
And then I go and finish the rest of the thing. And it just like that has been my experience with the side, with some of the side stuff. Like again, like the stuff that is like I've done some of the gold saucer stuff and they're like, and I'm fine with the gold saucer side because like that is what gold saucer is.
Yeah.
Like gold saucer is an amusement park. It has all this like weird. So I'm fine going in and playing this like, you know, ass little like space game. I'm sitting there, I'm like this is just part of the experience. Like I'm not mad about it because that is a part of like that, like there is a reason that this exists. But again, there's so much of the side stuff that has no reason to exist in the game, and I do not understand it's even here. And like that has been, I'm very much picking and choosing. Like I'm engaging to some extent. The Proto Relic stuff I want to do a little bit of. I'm starting to give up on some of the other side stuff because I'm realizing that it's requiring other side stuff to do. Like I was like, oh, I'll do all of Chadley's, you know, combat challenges because I like combat challenges. But well, to unlock this combat challenge, you have to find this combat thing in the world. And then but you have to complete these things. And then even in Gold Saucer, it's another thing where it's like, well, you can do a couple of these. But to unlock the other ones, you have to have done this in the side world. And I'm like, nope. Not, don't care. Then if you're gonna make me do all of the side stuff, then I just won't do any of the side stuff, I guess. So that's kind of where I am. But
I get that. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for me. I've slowed down a good bit on it. I'm still really, really enjoying it. I've just been busy with life. And so you've caught up to me, but I am on chapter 9 now. And so I'm in the back half of the game. Had a very kind of wrapped up the part of Barrett's personal backstory is where I'm at in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so very much loving it still. I'm hoping I got a little bit more back on track. Earlier this evening and yesterday evening with it, and I'm hoping to kind of get a new kickstart back on the game. We are running super long, so I'll just hold it till next week. I've been playing more Dragon Quest V, Hand of the Heavenly Bride. Very much loving that. It brings the old school JRPG vibe back to me because it is an old school JRPG. Just so much grinding, you know, trying to find the best equipment, things like that, like things that come into that territory. But I'm really, really enjoying it. So I'll give more thoughts on that. I said that last week, but I think we're almost an hour and a half tonight I'll just save it for next week. Keep everyone wanting more, but I'm loving it.
Yeah. And I'll add to that poll. I've also been playing a little bit of the first Earthbound.
Yes, yes.
So
he cold dropped that on me this week, people. He just sent me a copy of the cartridge he had, and I was like, you can't just drop this casually.
Yeah. Just to kind of like prime the pump a little bit, I got months ago, never mentioned it because I never got the time to like really put a whole lot of time into it with all the games coming out. Mm-hmm. But I got an Analog Pocket fall. Mm-hmm. And have dabbled with it here and there, but it's only been, I've been trying to like get a couple of, you know, games that I've like wanted to play for a while. And I came across like a guy on Etsy who does like fan translations and things like that over to carts. And one of his things that like has sold probably the most is like he has a fan translation of Mother 3 on GBA. And he has a bundle where it's like Mother 3 plus like a port of Earthbound on GBA. So like even though I have access to play Earthbound on like an SNES Classic or on my Switch, I'm choosing to play it on effectively a Game Boy because that just feels more authentic. So I'll talk about that. Corey.
Retro Week.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet?
Best place is gonna be Instagram, #SlingandThrasher or our Gmail, arcade.cozy@gmail.com. I don't know why I said it like that. It's late. That's why. But yeah, that's where you can find us. What about you, Chris? If you can't be found, who can they follow this week?
Corey, if you want to follow, I don't know, who's a good person to follow, Corey?
Oh, we talked a good, we praised a lot of Sucker Punch with Sly and Ghost of Tsushima.
Sucker Punch. Yeah. Who even knows what they're doing today?
Ghost of Tsushima 2.
Go follow. Yeah.
Which I don't Sucker know if Punch they Productions. Need the sequel, but that's a different thing.
Yeah. I could go for a new Sly Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, go follow Sucker Punch Productions. It looks like their latest post was about Infamous Second Son.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I could do go follow them. Infamous Sucker Punch 3. Prod.
Yeah, I could do some Infamous 3. I could get down with whatever Sucker Punch wants to.
I think they're working on Ghost of Tsushima too. I think I saw.
Yeah,
they will likely be shown off at Summer Games Fest, is what I've seen.
Love it. Sweet. Corey.
That's it.
Next week.
Yeah.
Excited about it. Until then, though, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?
Games have too much game.
Oh my god, I need less games.
Let's game for more game.
Please.